Session number 13572, reel 4.
I think air crew were some of the most drunken, lecherous blokes in the war, especially on Bomber Command, because you never knew when you were going to buy it, like, you know, so you got in and had a good win, you know, no matter where it was, you know. Girls used to ring up, "Yo, you know, Sergeant, that's so-and-so there, why, well, I don't know, it's not here at the moment, why?" Well, I've got to see him. So he put the phone down and he'd find him. Come back. All right. Yeah, she's in the family way. Oh, Christ. All right. Next time she rang up, "So, I'm sorry, dear, he got the chop last night." That's how it is. Now, with a WAF, you couldn't do that with a WAF. See, because the WAF, they knew something about the service. See? And they used to go round to the Padre. You put any woman, a WAF, especially a WAF, straight up the CO, post it. Get it, you know, post it.
Well, reason? She's in the family way or what?
Yeah, yeah, you put the WAF in the family way, see, so you got yourself posted straight away.
You did?
No, I didn't. This was the procedure, the CO post you. But the WAF was a bit wily. She'd go round the Padre. Hey, the Padre was always a squadron leader. And he'd find out where
you've been posted to, a week later. No matter where you was, you're in this country, there's the weapon. Gate. So the only way out of it was to get yourself posted abroad. And that was the only way a WAF couldn't follow you.
And this was it, because you didn't expect to live, so you got in and had a good win, you know, no matter where you went. You know, no matter what bomber squadron you was on, it was all the same, more or less. I mean, some of the losses were colossal, really. You know.
Did you know of any people who couldn't take it anymore?
One or two, I knew. They were just sent down to Uxbridge and stripped. See? You know, there's no arguments.
What held you together? I mean, did you feel like dropping out at any time?
No. I think it was some, you know, you couldn't, how could you face them? I mean, you were scared on every one, because every trip was different. See, it might appear the same, but it wasn't, you know, because every trip was different. You never knew. There was always that uncertainty, you never know, you know. One trip you might get caught by a fighter, you might go a dozen trips before you get another fighter to turn up. But the flak might be a bit closer than they were the trip before. You know, things like that at different places. You know, you could cross the coast, not get a shot fired at you. Another night you go over there and you get all hell round you, you know. So every trip was different, you know. Even though you might go to the same town. You know, I went to most of Ruhr towns twice, you know, Cologne, Essen, Duisburg, Dortmund, you know, Wuppertal, all them kind of places twice. They're still different. It's different to the one, you know, you went the time before. See?
And the odds were so extreme that for, you know, for everyone like you who got away with it, there are people catching it on their first trip.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, blokes were catching it on first trips and 50 first trips, you know. There was no, nobody was you know, got away with it because they were them, you know what I mean? Didn't care who they are, you know, you could be group captains and buy it. You know, rank didn't mean a thing, really. You were all in the same boat.
Did you ever have any feelings for the people you were dropping the bombs on?
No, none. The more we killed, the better it was, as far as I was concerned. They'd bomb me every night for 4 months in 40. I know more we kill, better it is. Don't matter what they are, women, kids, they won't breed. See? Because everybody was a target in war. Everybody. Men, women and children are a target. See, in Germany, you bomb it, the school killed 1,000 kids. Good it? Because there's 1,000 mothers and fathers somewhere. Fathers, 900 at least, are in the 40s. Blokes on the Russian front couldn't get home. But blokes in Germany, little willies and a load of rubble. There was no such thing as compassionate leave in the German army. So now you've created 30 blokes going to whop it. 30 deserters. Deserters were hanged in front of the regiment in Germany. So you've killed 30 soldiers. 1,000 women. 100 possibly looking after children. The rest in factories. Down tools. Get the rubble. Germany's lost their working hours for possibly 2 or 3 weeks. Nothing is going to be produced out of that factory. See, it's not only getting the kids out, burying them, and all the moaning and groaning that goes on, you know, when you lose children. See, Germany, they're not capable of working. See, Germany's lost those men out, women hours, for 3 or 4 weeks. And we used to get this round from Harris. Destroy the factory, they'll build a mile harder to find, you know, underground here. Destroy the workers' homes, Germany loses the man hours for a few weeks. Kill the worker himself, Germany's lost the man hours forever. So everybody and everything was a target. And the Germans didn't discriminate when they started bombing London or Liverpool or Coventry. They couldn't care less where the bombs went so long as it hit the town. They knew it was killing women and kids. Of course they did. See? And when them airmen went back, bombed England. Don't matter where they came from, Dresden. You know, he's an hero. Give him the freedom of the city. In 1940 and 41, he's bombed London.
So what's the thing you were talking earlier on about the time in the war when nothing was going right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Not for us.
Except that Bomber Command was actually hitting Germany.
Yeah, they were the only people who were doing it. And when they got their act right, that's when the Germans started screaming. Until they got their act right, and it wasn't until, actually really, early 43, that Bomber Command, you know, finally got their act right, you know. And Hamburg was one of the best. And they didn't realise the damage they'd done to Hamburg. If they had, the war would have ended by Christmas 43. Because all we'd done was, all you had to do was Hamburg, another half a dozen towns, and the Germans would have jacked it. Speer said that, you know, their German armament minister. He said if you'd have done that another half a dozen towns, he said the Germans would have had to give in. Because they killed over 180,000 at Hamburg in a week. That's German estimates. I don't suppose they ever will find out the actual number, you know. See? And Hamburg was picked because it was the biggest inland port in Germany. They were making new boats there, assembling new boats, you know, bits for this, bits for that. That was the only reason they did it, Hamburg. I went to Hamburg once. I went to Hamburg. But I mean, I had no compassion over them. I couldn't care less. The more we killed was Dresden, we should have gone back there the next night and killed another 50,000 as far as I'm concerned. You know, no compunction about him at all. Because I expected, if I bail out and they pick me up, I expected a rough time to start with.
Yeah,
in Hamburg they did. They lynched half a dozen airmen one night. Yeah, I suppose when you look at it, it's reasonable. If you've got the kind of bombing we gave them, I mean, the second night, they created a new word, fire and storm, and it was 800 degrees centigrade in their air raid shelters. I mean, they were getting fried alive in their air raid shelters. So you can understand their feelings, you know, if they got hold of the blokes who were doing it. You know, you didn't expect to live. And that's the worst thing that could happen to you, a bailout over a target. You know, it's the worst thing. See, if you bailed out 100 miles away, you've got chances, you know, of being alive. Yeah, well, they did. They kept you.
If you bailed out over Holland, because you got a chance of...
Yeah, or France, you had chances of getting home. See? But I had no compunction about Germans. And I mean, when the war was over, they opened up these concentration camps. Oh, yes. Yeah, we didn't kill enough of you to start with. Because it was no good saying, oh, it was Hitler. Because by 1936, every German was a Nazi. He'd eliminated all opposition. They were all in concentration camps. Jews, gypsies, nonconformists, you name it. They were in his camps. Because the first Germans in the concentration camps were Germans. He eliminated all opposition. And by 39, and if you look at the newsreels in 1940 of Hitler going back to Berlin, you know, after they conquered France, them people didn't have guns at their backs cheering. He was a messiah, a god. He'd done something in 12 months which they hadn't done in the First World War in 4 years. He'd done it in, what, 3 weeks. He was a messiah. He couldn't go wrong. He conquered all Europe. Set thing in a month.
When the war ended and you came out of the Air Force, what was your first job in Civvy Street?
I drove buses, London buses. I had that for about 6 years.
How did you find settling back into an ordinary Civvy job?
Funny, but you know, you adapt pretty quick because you had to fend for yourself. Like in the Air Force, everything was done for you. Your laundry was done, your meals were done. You know, you didn't have to prepare your meals; it was all done for you. You know, medical, go and see the MO. You know, everything was done for you. You know, but when you got back to Civvy Street, it was a bit different.
How did you find suddenly being able to plan ahead, saying I'm going on holiday next year, or I'm going to go to the pictures or see football next week, or the fact, I mean, where you were telling me when you were in the RAF, you couldn't see till the next day.
Oh, no. It seemed strange at first, you know. Nobody was shooting at you. You know, Christ, I'm going to live. Like, you know, nobody's going to shoot at me, you know. It seemed strange, really. You didn't believe your luck that you got away with it. You know, when you started thinking all the blokes you knew, you know, 70% were dead. You know, you thought, Christ, you know, how did I get away with that? Why? You know, and then you didn't give it another thought. You didn't dwell on it.
Yeah. You settled down to civilian life pretty well.
Pretty well, yeah. God, still, where I come from, around that Paddington area, we were lucky around there in Kilburn. Most of the boats had come home. You know, they were all lumbered in the Army, the Air Force and the Navy. And I think over 90% got home, you know, come back over the war. And he was at the billiard, of course. I used to go in the billiard hall. I was a good snooker player at Fallon War. And that was our meeting place, you know, Joe Davis's billiard hall, in between High Road, Kilburn and Arrow Road. And most of those blokes come home, you know, only one or two got the chop out of that area, you know. Of course, Joe Davis is gone, his billiard hall was taken over by the ALP, you know, that's where he went to get a gas mask. And they all used to congregate up the billiard hall up in Kilburn, underneath Burton's. We used to get in there. And practically all of them come home, you know.
Did you have a house to go to? Did you have somewhere to live when you got home?
Oh, yeah. Still had the house in Elbert Street, you know, where mother's father's out.
And you got married, presumably?
Yeah, I got married. When was it? Oh, God. Oh, that was in the 50s. I was about 30 odd when I got married, you know. And going up in the snooker hall, see, there were blokes there, Patton, he'd been in Italy, the Sphinx had been in Italy, you know, several in Italy, you know, in the army. Some have been out the Far East against the little yellow men. All of the two or three had opted in the Navy, you know, they'd been all round the world, you know, I mean, we never went outside London before the war. Yet we've been all round the world, you know, and it was, you know, in the pub. you're still trying to follow or trying to get away with what you got away with in the war, but you couldn't, you know.
Cause it was a bit more law and order around.
Yeah, it was a bit more law and order around. You never got away with it, you know, like you did with a uniform on your back, you know. But eventually, you know, you were back pre-war. Well, when rationing finished in 54, because that was a bad thing, I think, about civvies. They had a hard time, really. That rationing wasn't all that great. The black market was ripe. You know, in London it was.
You were better fed on RAF stations, weren't you?
Yeah, far better, yeah.
I mean, your bomber crews had all the best.
Oh, yeah. So you were given oranges, or can of orange juice every week. See, you got egg. Every time you went out, you got an egg before you went, an egg when you come back. See, people couldn't get eggs. See, you were well fed.
Plenty of meat and stuff.
Yeah, meat at least five times a week. See, well, Sibby was lucky to get it one meal a week. That's all it lasts, 4 ounces with one chop. 1 meal a week, really.
Then you're out in Civvy Street where even bread was rationed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, it wasn't actually rationed. It was rationed by shortage. It wasn't on the ration book, but it was rationed by shortage, you know. I mean, the baker only had so much flour to bake so many loaves per day. See? So it was a fiddler's paradise after the war, you know, till about 54, till rationing finished.
What did you vote in 45 in July?
I voted for Churchill. Couldn't vote Labour. Christ, I can't vote them. They were gutless.
A lot of people did.
Yeah, there was too many conscience in Labour. See, I didn't like them. Morrison, Ernie Bevin, that monkey who they made Prime Minister, Wilson, Gaitskill, all that. Trash, they were all conscious. See, Morrison and Bevin were conscious in the First World War. Did 3 months inside. See? Gaitskill just lifted up the phone in 39, it got him and that Wilson, a 16-year-old little girl's job in some Ministry of Information. See? Wilson was 24. Gaitskill was 31. See? They'd learned from the First World War, don't register the country, get yourself a registered job where you can't go in the forces. But to me, they're still gutless. The Labour was full of conscious and communists. And my old man told me, never vote for a conchi or a communist. They're both traitors. And they are. They're both traitors. And I never have voted for them. Although some of their ideas are better than the Tories. And that's the reason. I mean, even now, I've got conscience and communists in the Labour Party. If they booted them out, they'd probably get back into power. But until they do that, they won't. See, I mean, you ask this monkey, what was his name? That Welsh git who.
Kinnock.
His old woman's a communist. He's a red. More or less. Will you use the atom bomb next World War? He refused to answer. No. Because, you know, he wouldn't do it. And against the Russians, which was the enemy when he was about, that was the only way you were going to beat them. Or the Chinese, that's the only way you're going to beat them. Drop an atom bomb on them. See, because the bombing we did was ineffective now. Oh no, can't use the atom bomb. Oh, dear. Yeah, so you lose the war. You're occupied, which is the worst thing that can happen to any nation, to be occupied by another power. That's the worst thing.
Looking back on your youth, which had this 6 years taken out of it, do you reckon in the long term you've benefited from it, going through this punishing kind of period. It was punishing, but it strengthened your character or did something.
Yeah, it made you more independent. You were more able to cope. Because you thought, well, you've got away with that, you'll get away with anything. But there's nothing here to worry you. See, that was the worst thing. You started worrying when you were flying. That's where you were halfway to a nut house. So you had to be thankful that you could wake up next morning. Because one morning you wasn't. It was as simple as that. Now, if you've got that idea in your head, you got away with it. Nothing worried you. You know, the only thing you worried you was that, well, we got the night all, we're looking for a woman and a free drink. You know, get drunk and wind up with a woman. That was your main interest, really, outside bombing. Because you never knew when you were going to get hold of them. See? But at the end, when it was all over and you got away with it, it was marvellous. You know, you didn't think you were going to do it.
Have you ever worried since?
No, I've never worried, really. Nothing worth worrying about, is it? See, the worst thing that can happen to you is to die. That's the worst thing. Don't matter what happens to you. If you lose a leg, you can still live. You can go blind. You're still alive. You lose a lot. I think you lose most if you go blind than anything. But you're still alive. There's still things you can enjoy. If you're dead, you enjoy nothing.
Now, who worries? Lose your mind.
Yeah, well, it's just more or less the same. Mm. It's the same as being dead, you know. But who worries about dying today? Nobody, do they?
They don't think about it.
Yeah. Now, if you don't worry about dying, which is the worst thing that can happen to you, why worry about anything else? It's stupid. It's silly. You worry about you can't pay the rent. Yeah, call next week. Hot bit. Worry me? Well, I own the house, but I mean, when I didn't, I couldn't have cared less whether I paid the rent or not. Didn't worry me. You know, rent man, call next week. You know. And if you start worrying about things, when they do happen, what are you going to do? You've been worrying for weeks, and now all of a sudden it happens. What's the good of worrying then? It happened. You spent weeks worrying for nothing, because it happened. Whatever it is. It was so silly to me. You know, I can't see any reason in worry. You're not interested who runs the country, because they're all at the fiddle. Don't matter who they are. Tories, Liberals, Labour, they're all at it. They all earn a lot of living out of it. They earn a good living, politicians. On all the ills of the country, they do it with politicians, nobody else. But their stupidity or short-sightedness or something like that. See?
Going back to the... we've just got a few minutes left on the tape. You belong to the local... Is it the Air Gunners Association?
Yeah.
Do you go a lot? Are there a lot of people around here, I suppose, in Swindon?
No, we haven't got a branch here, Air Gunners Association, not in Swindon. Mm. Yeah, there's only about five or six of us. But I go to the Air Gunners reunion every year, you know. I go to Holland every 2 years. The Air Gunners go over to Drunton every 2 years. Well, I go every 2 years, but they go every year, you know. We've got blokes going. And the Dutch put you up for nothing. You go in there, all new people's homes, like, you know, and don't cost you a penny. All it costs you is your fare there and back, you know. But we give them a night out, you know, we give them a good night out before we leave.
And you enjoy those reunions?
Yeah, you're over there for a week, and we've been strolled across the Moan and Elder Dam, you know, rebuilt. One bloke goes to Arnhem, he got the chop at Arnhem, Horton Stirling's, Wally Simpson. One of the few air gunners with the MM. He won the MM at Arnhem. But it's It's nice. You know, the Dutch remember, you know.
The Dutch of your generation are around.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but they bring their kids up to remember as well. See, they don't here. See, at Dronten, the war memorial was a Lank propeller, all for Lank. What they found in the ditch 10 years ago, Dronten wasn't there. It was reclaimed from the sea, you know. And they got an air gunner's room in the mayor's, you know, in the, what they call it, town hall. Air gunner's room, you know.
Why Holland in particular? Was it because they were underneath where you flew?
One of our blokes, Smith, Jimmy Smith, he comes from London, Mick Smith. He was over there 1 week, and they said, well, come back, you know. And they said, was you in the war? He said, yeah, I was an air gunner. And he was a prisoner of war. He got the chop, and he was a prisoner of war. And they said, well, bring a few over, like, you know. And eventually, it became an annual thing. Annual, I mean, there's 2 or 3 coach loads go there, air gunners, go there. About 150, you know, go there. And the Dutch push up, you know, for nothing. And they bring this.
What's that bloke?
He's like what they call them, burgomasters, you know, like the mayor. And they have one bloke, the first bloke, well, over there, the burgomaster mayors are mayors for life. You know, they're not elected every year like we. And one was an old boy, the first one, and he said, "Well, why? You gave us something. You said that the Germans." Couldn't. The Germans, after 40, told us the war's over. You know, that's it, we're the governors, the war's over. But he said, we knew when you blokes were coming over, the war wasn't over. They hadn't won it. And you gave us hope that one day you'd turn up. I thought, yeah, you know, the difference was that they were occupied, we weren't. That was the difference. He said, we knew that one day you'd turn up. And it was Canadians who liberated Holland, you know, mainly. You know, ground troops. But they got a special thing for us because Operation Manor was put on just before the war ended. And they went, I wasn't on this, but they went over, Lancs and Halifaxes went over 100 to 150 feet and dropped grub. Hundreds of tons of grub. Because 30,000 died
of famine.
Yeah, see, Germans had nothing. Well, Germans took, they kept for themselves. They weren't interested in how many Dutch died, you know. And Operation Manor saved thousands of lives, you know. So they've got a special thing for the RAF, you know, the Dutch. And they bring us. It's a very moving sight, really. You know, I didn't be going, oh, I'm a zard. But I tell you what they do. They have, at this war memorial, they have a service and, you know, the last post and all that lark. And all the, you know, they had the AOC of Germany, RAF, Air Vice Marshal, he turns up, some Dutch generals turn up, all these kind of people turn up, a top politician comes, Dutch, all lay ribs, you know. And it's lined by Boy Scouts, you know, and Girl Guides, you know, and you've got to walk through these, you know. And when all the ribs are laid, you see all the kids, bunch of daffodils, dandelions, yeah, all surge forwards, you know, all these kids, practically every kid, I think, in Dronten, lays it on the woman. I thought myself, oh, Christ, like, you know, they bring the kids up. We don't bring the kids up for that. Our kids, it's history, isn't it?